Hello and welcome to the first Tripe Supper of the summer, the first of many, we hope.
Yeah.
Phil Talentire is to my left, Chris Garbutt here and Anthony Vickers. I'm Dom Shaw. We're going to do an end of season awards with a bit of a difference, and seeing as though I'm hosting, that probably means I'm the flaming James Corden, because he seems to do absolutely every awards. I'd seen he was at the Royal Wedding at the weekend, which I wasn't one bit surprised about.
Didn't you get invited?
No, I was down in London as well.
Betty Mitz with Harry, didn't
he? Well, yeah.
It was the third biggest event of the weekend, wasn't it? After Stockton Town and the FA Cup final.
Yes, yeah. You know, fourth after Stockton Town, the FA Trophy. I was down in London for the weekend, and Vic, I know you're not a big fan weren't a big fan of the Royal Wedding, but I was in my hotel room on Saturday lunchtime, and I looked outside, and I honestly couldn't believe it was at a standstill. The roads were completely dead. Absolutely nothing on the roads.
Presume that's because of the Stockton Town match.
End of season awards. I know we probably kind of maybe want to move on a little bit from this season and look forward, but it is only a week since the season ended, and we've got a full summer of talking about which attacking midfielders Tony Pulis is going to target.
God, it's only a week. Week and 2 days.
I don't know.
Gabo, you're quite a needy Borough fan. There's been a few away games where Garbs has come with us, and on the way home he spent the entire journey asking how good the Borough fans looked in the away end and what song sounded most.
Not to do with the drink you take.
Normally 10 cans deep.
So we'll start with the fans. What was your best away day of the year, do you think? We'll start with yourself, Chris. Obviously you were there in the away end.
Best away day, away days can be looked at from two sort of different perspectives, really. I think Borough's best away performance of the season was Derby County.
All I'll say is we've got 20 sectors here again. We don't want your match by match analysis, and then you're going to break it down with a winner.
Oh, week one.
And then we got to September.
It was 10 o'clock, it was Wolves away.
We've got to fill out summer somehow, haven't we?
and that's when I moved from the car into the strong boy.
Yeah. Best away performance, Derby. I think best away day for everything else, you know, the crack of the lads and all that. Ipswich was a good weekend. Sheffield Wednesday as well, was a good away day, just before Christmas.
Wasn't for Gary Monk.
Not for Gary Monk, obviously. And then the traditional boys' day out at Barnsley's, always a scream, that always draws every Tom, Dick and Harry up.
You mentioned Derby there. From the press box, the away end looked class at Derby. As we told Garbs about a different time.
Yes, Garbs, you did look minty.
Did you get any videos?
We reassured him time and time again that honestly you were as good as you sounded. No, it was. For us, it's about we're not in with the fans, are we? So for me, it's about the
atmosphere. Except for home games.
It's a good job the question's about away games. For me, the atmosphere around the Derby game, the 10 minutes before the game started, and then the actual match itself was fantastic. And I thought the Borough fans played a huge part in Borough getting that result that day. So for me, it's a no-brainer. It was the best atmosphere probably of the season. I'd say it was Villa Park for that playoff second leg. That felt like a massive match. It felt like a Premier League fixture. It should be a Premier League fixture, Borough versus Villa, all day long. I thought that was terrific as well.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed Fulham. It was early in the season. It was nice and sunny. Everyone was optimistic. It's a lovely ground to visit, as we know. Everyone's dead friendly. There's no edge there. I went to the match on the boat with the Middlesbrough supporters south, which was a bit weird. And it's always a really nice place to go. It doesn't feel like an edgy match, but it feels almost like a treat when you're walking up to the ground through that lovely
feels
park.
Like a friendly,
it's quite leafy little light walk along the Thames.
But the game itself was quite good.
Borough got
Borough got the goal at the end. There was massive celebration, so the fans obviously enjoyed that one as well.
Did we look good?
You look good. you get a lot of fans at Fulham, and it's the big day out for Middlesbrough supporters south. There's the so-called neutral end, so there's always a lot of fans there, despite the lack of edge almost between the clubs or whatever. So for me, that was a really good day out as well.
Seamlessly into the Limbs Award.
Yeah, sorry, Phil, I'm just going to say this could be a real financial windfall for somebody. It should be like when you go on one of those rides at Disneyland and you can buy the picture afterwards. Should be like that when you go to away games. We'll sell, you can go outside and buy the picture. 32 minutes in when Burris scored. Here's me celebrating.
Garbo would have a wall of away days.
They'd all pinned up on
with a programme and the team next to it.
That look a surprise with the camera. Mid celebration.
Do you know what? Like, just
tell his grandchildren in 50 years' time.
Yeah. Just touching on that, I mean, away days, you know, the Barnsley I mentioned and Derby where you know, the away ends are packed out, but I do also like the sort of like 7 hour journeys, not that many of us there, like Cardiff's away, because I think the camaraderie between Borough fans then is really strong.
Is that respect, isn't it?
Yeah,
if you're going
of course,
to so-and-so
yeah.
on a Tuesday.
Cardiff on a Tuesday night being a classic
exactly.
example.
Yeah, and generally they tend to be weekends for a lot of Borough fans. You know, Ipswich away was one for us, Cardiff the same, so you know, you maybe go down the night before and you know the cracks going in the bar and the night before and all that. So
Bristol was good apart from the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, good weekend. I bumped into you in Ipswich on the Saturday night, which I had to remind you of the Monday
morning. You did. You know,
back in the that was when more importantly for me, that was when I bumped into Kevin the Artist Painter. I was sat with Maddo outside. Kevin the Artist Painter, a darts player, yeah. for those who aren't familiar with the PDC circuit, walked in. And honestly, I was like a kid at Christmas.
Yeah.
Jump dived on him.
That's another subsection, isn't it?
I found myself famous
people you've seen at away games.
At away games, yeah. Well, you'd set me off on my Tyrone from Corrie story when I bumped into Will and Weatherby, but I don't want to buy it. Although, when I went down the lakeside this year, I watched Duzzer, saw Dennis Wise in a service.
All right.
And I think he was in the jungle this year.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
After it was a week after that.
Where was the match where you were coming out and Justin Hoyt went past me?
It was just me and you. We were in Waterloo.
And my good friend Hoity walked past.
Justin Hoyt ran past
with his serving and rate.
That's the first time Justin Hoyt ran past anyone, wasn't it?
Right, Lynn's award. The, you know, it kind of speaks for itself, doesn't it? Fulham's the one that springs to mind for me. That last minute equaliser, seconds after falling behind. Any other kind of moments where you know, it took off in the away end or the home end?
Besic's at Derby, I think it was pretty powerful celebration. I think having going one down at Sheffield Wednesday as well, and again, like, you know, the reasons that I sort of nominated them too, going one down at Sheffield Wednesday and coming back was, you know, that's always it. When you 1-0 down away from home, you know, you score to claw it back, that's always a bit of a wild
performance was.
The second half,
what happened next.
The second half was extremely good, and I think he even said, didn't he, Monk, after he got the 9 o'clock bullet. You said, I feel as though we're getting there.
He looked the happiest. I'd seen him. Obviously, we weren't in the home presses, but the away press conferences, he looked the happiest. I'd seen him after that.
Yeah.
Phil, you've done a bit. You did a bit earlier this week on kind of the key moments of the season. Mm. One that springs to mind is Martin Braithwaite's missed header at Wolves.
Yeah.
Are there any goals in there that were hugely important in the whole scheme of things?
I mean, you could pick out a couple, couldn't you? But I think, the one that springs to mind is Preston, in terms of what that meant. I mean, I wasn't at Preston that day, actually. Looking up to have New Year's Day off for once. And I remember seeing the score come through and Borough were 2-1 down at half-time, and you're thinking, got beat by Villa in the previous match on the back of the disappointment of the Monk era. You think, this surely can't be yet more misery, because let's face it, 2016, second half of that year wasn't any sort of fun, and then all of 2017 seemed to be a bit of a grind. And then suddenly, within bang, bang, two goals going in a relatively short space of time in the second half, and you kind of think, and you read the match reports and you find out that, you know, the manager made some fundamental changes to the team, and bold changes, and you kind of think, well, hopefully that's the kickstart. So, you know, that particular goal really jumped out. Obviously, the Braithwaite miss that we mentioned, I mean, I know you can talk about counterfactuals and what might have been, but Wolves weren't that much better than Burr on the day.
No, it was settled by an hour on the slip.
Yeah, you know, ultimately it came down to a bit of a nervy first half from Burr, a very poor piece of defending from Danny, a really bad miss from Braithwaite, and then second half it was 50-50. Burr could have easily got a point at Wolves and possibly even won it. Mm. So, you know, those little sort of things don't go for you. They get a win at the start of the season, they're up and running, they've got a new manager and a new team and the fans are behind them, but have a bit of a setback. Then they were never convincing against Sheffield United, really, and suddenly you're limping into the season, aren't you? So Yeah, it's. I would say something like that. I think also the big significance for me was, and I've said it in here before, Traore not getting banned. When you look at the four games after Traore, that he would have missed, Borough took three wins and a draw out of those four games, and I think he scored at least two goals and something like four assists.
And that's when he was red hot as well.
Yeah, so you take him out of that, and I don't think Borough make the playoffs. Mm. So they're the kind of big turning points for me that seasons hang on.
Your Limbs moment of the year, Vic? Your Limbs moment of the year?
Obviously, Fulham. I think it was the timing as much as anything. Mm. And it felt like it kept the sort of early optimism going because they were outplayed that day. And Fulham were excellent that day. They were given the runaround. And to pull it out of the bag at the last minute was fantastic. Mm. I think the 3-3 draw at Sunderland was utter chaos for long spells, but you know there's nothing better than scoring away at Sunderland. Got three for the price of one there on that day, so that was good as well.
I think that third one as well, because it was like sort of to and fro, and like we scored then they scored, like the deflation of going of them getting their second goal equaliser to then go literally up the other end within a couple of, was it 7 minutes, and Bamford scored again. That was a good feeling.
What do you have down as your shock of the season, or of your surprise of the season? I mean, for me it'd be how the first half of the season turned out. Mm. You know, and the fact that all that kind of optimism was quickly, I've never known a manager lose to Borough fans as quickly as Gary Monk did. So I think the way that turned out.
Steve,
what
did you?
I mean, I know that he was a lot of people's. You know, a lot of people sort of had a little bit of optimism when he came in, but I don't think it was a shock the way that he lost them, because I don't think he ever had them. Really.
No, but all the signings and the statement of intent in the summer.
Shock of the season. I think just how, you know, Borough fans were so hoping that we were going to smash the league and sort of be in contention, and it was evident very, very early that we were going to be nowhere near that, wasn't it? And I think that like sort of was a bit like,
I mean, I think given the way it turned out at times, I think one of the shocks of the season was making the playoffs, because for more of the season it looked that Borough weren't going to finish in the top six than it did the work. Mm.
I'd have said one of the biggest shocks of the season was Adama's Traore's form under Pulis. A, because I think most people said he wouldn't get near the first team under Tony Pulis. He's the least Tony Pulis player in terms of reliability from what we've seen so far. And also just the fact that he'd been so hit and miss, hadn't he? I mean, he'd struggled to put two decent games together in the entire time he'd been at Borough. So I think that's, if you'd said, you know, I can't remember, I think it might be John over speaking after the Bristol City match and say, well, that's it, Traore will never be near the team ever again. Yeah. You know, that's his last chance gone. And you can't, I don't think anybody would have disagreed with that. I think, you know, and so for him to, within the space of a month, to be the first, one of the first names on the team sheet, it's a remarkable turnaround.
I think for pure moment of like, you're joking, like shock was, it's probably for the season's got to be like the 9 p.m. after Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah, yeah.
We'd
like,
just got home.
Yeah,
we're all just arriving home, and you know you open your laptop thinking I'll just write something up, get a start for tomorrow, and then suddenly everything just breaks loose.
Christmas Eve the next day, just won away at Sheffield Wednesday with a pretty convincing second half performance, and I was in the boozy. I was got back to Teesside, and I was sat in the pub, and like, see, it was 9 o'clock. One of the lads went, he's gone.
Yeah, it's not that he went; it was the timing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought he might go after Millwall, because I mean, me and Vic were at Millwall, and it was a shambles, wasn't it?
Yeah, and not only was it a shambles, it was the third away day in a row where they'd lost in almost identical circumstances. 2-1, balls to the far post, poorly defended, caught on the break, and they just looked like it was the same mistake over and over again.
Yeah, what I think was most alarming about Millwall, I wasn't there; I was at a wedding that day. But when I looked at the score and how it turned out, I wasn't one bit surprised.
Yeah.
Like you said, it had become the narrative of the away games.
I mean, I think the shock of this, not the shock of this, it was a massive dislocation halfway through the season, and everything radically changed. It was like everything had been flipped over in terms of the players that had been on the fringes were suddenly key members of the team. You would never have put Rudy Gestet on as being the main man in your tactical shape at the start of the season. All the money that was spent at the start of the season up front, suddenly come January, you know, £30 million of it wasn't in the team.
Well, I think I totted it up. I think one of the games in January, was it might have been, was it Fulham at home in January? One of those games, anyway. Borough had over £30 million worth of players on the bench. And I think that was probably the same as or more than the cost of the team on the pitch. Well, it just shows you, A, a club like Middlesbrough can't afford to have that amount of talent on the bench, and B, just how much that pre-season spending had been in the wrong areas, clearly. But as you say, Mick, it wasn't spent for that manager.
The marked thing was that a lot of the players who'd been the key men in the first half of the season, like Cyrus Christie, Martin Braithwaite, suddenly just weren't in the picture or weren't even at the club.
It's as though we planned this, because I guess we did briefly beforehand, but not that it was going to go in this order. The Ryan Shotton Award, which basically was for a player like you were talking about there, Vic, a player who kind of was nowhere really, and we did a bit earlier this season on who's played the most number of minutes this year, and it was two seasons within one, wasn't it? Shotton isn't the only one who was really a kind of fringe figure, to say the least, in the first half of the season, and then become a key figure in the second half. Yeah. If you go through, you know, there's Ayala, Patrick Bamford, Adama Traore,
Stuart Downing,
although obviously he developed into quite a key player, hadn't he, under Monk. George Friend, who'd lost his place to Fabio, who out of those players springs to mind, ones who kind of really grabbed the initiative under Keulis and nailed down the spot.
I think it's probably got to Traore again, hasn't it? You know, it was out of the team up until Christmas. Like you mentioned there, people were sort of saying that, you know, he's finished, that's him, he's done. You know, to transform his year the way he did and become Borough's player of the season in 4 months. I mean, I believe he's training with the Spain's first team, national team. If he'd said he'd be in he'd be training with the Spanish first team
when he missed the bus at Barnes.
Exactly, you would never ever imagine that. So yeah, shout out to Traore for that. I think he's done well, and credit to Pulis for that too. But there won't have been a player with. I think when Pulis came in, Traore won't have looked at that appointment and gone, This is a bit of me, do you know what I mean?
We all said he's a million miles away from being a Tony Pulis player.
Yeah. And Bamford, another one, he admitted that, didn't he? That when Pulis came in, he wasn't exactly rubbing his hands together and thinking.
He kind of felt Bamford got in by default, didn't he? Really?
But he was already in the team.
Yeah.
He was playing on that left side at the time,
on the bench.
Yeah. But in terms of being the first choice striker, he was behind Gestetti.
But he took his chance.
Yeah, exactly.
You know for a fact, though, don't you, that as soon as that appointment was made, Shotton would have had a napkin around his neck, licking his lips, wouldn't he?
He
was like, this is my chance.
Put his towel in the washing machine and make sure it was ready.
I mean, the two for me, the one who gets the award for the kind of the wrong reasons is Cyrus Christie, because it's now become the narrative, well, he wasn't very good defensively, but no one was saying he was a bad signing in December. Most people
I don't think anyone would say it now.
No,
it was just an agreement that he wasn't a Pulis player.
Most people would say he was one of the few positives to come out the first half of the season. So I think he gets the award in terms of going from hero to zero through no fault of his own. And I still go back to Stewie for the other one, because of all the people who had the furthest to go, I think he probably did, because he was training with the kids at the start of the season. Within a few weeks, Monk had realised the error of his ways, we assume anyway, and had him in the team, and for the first half of the season he was probably the best player.
I think that's all credit to Stewie for showing that determination, you know, at the twilight years of his career.
Didn't
want to leave, could have easily just gone to Birmingham, couldn't he? That deal could have been pushed over the line and could have just jacked it in, but you know, credit to who he's gone, like you said, he's gone from training with the kids to being Borough's best performer until probably January, February.
Two players who've worked the opposite way for Vic, Marvin Johnson and Lewis Baker. There was a stage early in the season when Johnson played 4 games out of 5, obviously included that blistering performance against QPR when he did look like a world beater. Lewis Baker, several championship clubs wanted him. This season, you know, when you talk to reporters of various clubs before games, and just off the top of my head, the guy from Reading and Sheffield Wednesday as well both said, oh, you know, we fancied him in the summer. Borough beat off interest from a fair few, and when he came in, it felt as though Monk was desperately awaiting his opportunity to get him in the team. And when he got in, you thought he was going to stay there. I mean, Baker has been a fringe figure who we've seen on the bench every now and again. Marvin Johnson has played 8 minutes under Pulis. Surely neither of them will be, but especially not Baker. Johnson won't be next season either.
Well, it looked like he was going on deadline day, and for whatever reason it didn't quite work out, but it looked like he was going back to Oxford, he hasn't figured. When he arrived, he had a couple of good early cameos, but I wouldn't have thought he was a game changer. He was very much one for the future, I think. It was just a question of potential and whether he could be bedded in at some point. Baker, I feel sorry for. It's a wasted year of his career.
Yeah.
You know, he was doing all right in Holland. Obviously, he wants to step up and test himself in England, and it looked like a good fit. Unfortunately for him, he arrived at a time when the team was going through a massive formation flux from one week to the next. You didn't know how many people were in midfield. Was it a deep sitting man with two central anchor men? Was it three flowing attackers? Was it two? He played wide on one occasion and looked completely
Fulham, he looked lost.
He was a fish out of water. That
he
wasn't
was
his position.
Man, wasn't he,
so he never got the chance to have more than two games in a row in the same position or in the same formation. So I feel sorry for him because we haven't seen him. He hasn't had a chance to show what he can do. He's wasted another year. He's got two managers. He hasn't been able to impress. Mm. So that places a big question mark over
him. Do you think Baker could have played... I know we've talked about this before on the track, but I remember looking back at a piece we did with a guy who covers Chelsea for Football London, and he was talking about him in the summer as being a central midfielder, not a number 10, but playing in central midfield. Did you see anything to suggest that he could have played in one of those roles for Borough?
I think it's hard for us to judge that because we didn't see enough of him. I mean, the sample of football that he actually had was so sort of sporadic and far and few between that it was hard to really build a judgment on him. The only thing that I think with Baker, and you know, he's been here for the full season, and obviously Harrison to a certain degree as well, is we only see them, and we only see all footballers, for 90 minutes on a Saturday where, you know, managers, coaches, analysts, so on and so forth, they see these guys for X amount of hours every single day through the week. So it just makes me think, like, you know, what are these guys not doing on a day-to-day basis that's not getting them a chance on a Saturday? I mean, Harrison, for instance, there, he's come in, he's been on the bench pretty much every single week. Borough, Aston Villa away, you know, absolutely crying out for some creativity, screaming for somebody that can get at Aston Villa and get in behind them and put dangerous balls
and
in the box
different.
And have a shot and do something different to what Aston Villa were expecting. Why didn't he get on? You know, what is he not showing Tony Pulis, and what was he not showing, you know, previous managers in Baker's case that's making them look to the bench and go, that, you know, you're my man to go and do that?
It seems a bit of a daft question, this, given the fact that we haven't seen him and we can't judge him as a player, but would you like Harrison to be around next year?
Well, if the manager hasn't been tempted in 6 months, then you've got to say no. You want someone that the manager's going to trust and is going to turn to at various points. For long spells, it was almost as if they were wasting spots on the bench.
Mm.
If you're not going to play, you're not part of the setup. It must be very disheartening for the individual, and then you come on and you ring rusty. So,
do you know what happened?
For his own sake, he needs to be playing football. He's probably better off going to another club where he's actually going to get to play
in
football.
The Championship. Is that?
I don't know what his level is.
The two things that flashed to my mind with Harrison when I've seen him was Ipswich and Reading. I mean, he sort of had two little cameos, and obviously he came on against Burton as well. When he came on against Burton, I thought he looked lively. He hit the bar. It was his shot that hit the bar that created Son Belong's goal. And then the cross at Ipswich with the corner, which was an absolute peach straight on the Bamford's head. So, I mean, generally all round play, we haven't seen much of him, but it's a little, you know, he can't be too disheartened with the contributions that he has actually made. It's just so brief.
Must
it's
be a better option at Villa than instead.
Well,
sure,
that's exactly what
I just
exactly
said that.
Yeah. Saying, yeah,
I said that while you were going to get the pizza and coffee.
unfortunately,
you've come back empty-handed.
Transformation of the season. Transformation of the season. I'll throw one in there. The transformation into Adama Traore of being Borough's corner taker. Because at the start of the season, he was seen as the man who couldn't cross a ball. At the end of the season, he wasn't just taking corners, but he was taking good corners.
Mm.
And not only because of Adama's corners, but because of the fact that you had Daniel Ayala in there, and that was another transformation, him into a centre-forward. Borough looked like scoring when they had corners. And it hasn't been like that for years. It's felt like years since you've got a corner.
Was there a period of, I think, when you collected Borough's last 10 goals, seven of them were from set pieces?
Yeah. Any other transformations that spring to mind?
Danny, I don't know if you mentioned him while I was in the pizza shop, but I mean, it's not mentioned now, but he had a dreadful first half of the season. You think the mistake against Wolves, but also the Fulham match, where literally everything he did, you know, went wrong, didn't he? He got sent off.
Derby, not Fulham.
Derby at home. Mm-hmm. He had a real nightmare of a game. He didn't look comfortable in that setup. He wasn't playing his best. He'd had struggles the previous season, hadn't he? And then in the second half of the season, we wanted to stand out players.
And also on the issue of Danny, I mean, there was a couple of times where he looked like he'd been badly injured, and we think, oh, he's going to be out for weeks because it was nearly February. And yet, mysteriously, he returned like 3 days later looking as strong as ever.
And what was the nickname they had for him at Brentford?
I don't know. When his missus put the video of him like he could literally walk. Unable
he
to walk up
walk
the garden
on the Tuesday, Wednesday,
and yet at the weekend he was one of Borough's strongest players again.
What was
if you think back to 2 or 3 years ago, that kind of injury, it was like he's out for February.
Gabs, something you suggested before, and the gaffe of the season, the mistake of the season, the error of the season.
A couple spring to mind. I mean, under the circumstances, it was probably, you know, a bad time to make it, but obviously that second half was dreadful. But I remember Randolph's slice against Derby at home. That was pretty. Yeah. That was a bit of a blooper, wasn't it? Braithwaite's header at Wolves, open goal, absolute sitter. Trying to think, there's been a few, hasn't there?
I mean, a point in Gary Monk didn't go down.
Yeah. Stevie Gibson, gaff of the season.
Adama Traore's subtle challenge at Aston Villa.
I mean, in terms of a gaff, I mean, missing the bus.
Yeah.
Adama missing the bus because he had that performance against Bolton, didn't he, where we all thought finally it's clicked. He's added end product to his undoubted creative ability.
Yeah.
And then he went and got himself sent off, probably through over enthusiasm in the next match against Villa. When he came back from his ban, I think was it the next match when he was available, but Barnsley, of course, he failed to make the bus, and so you think, well, you just keep shooting yourself in the foot.
And so he
was at fault for a couple of his own gaffes, really.
I think if we rewind to the sun-kissed August optimism, Britta Sombalonga, going back to Forest, you know, he put together a whole string of gaffes there and missed a hat-trick of sitters, and he was just trying so hard that day.
Yeah.
And you felt for him because nothing went right.
Yeah.
He could have scored 5 or 6
easy
goals.
Yeah. Easy. He got into positions and he was trying too hard, you know, to use the cliche. But
Burrow could have done a win at that stage of the season as well, couldn't it?
Yeah. Gestead at Norwich was a what you doing moment, wasn't it? Just within, so you know, it was got booked, and then just blatantly 5-6 minutes later to go and do that. That was a little bit of a rare.
That was another one of those days where you know Borough looked a million miles away. If someone had said to you at that point that they're going to end up finishing fifth and going to the playoffs with a fair bit of momentum,
6.5 million, Ashley Fletcher. That seems a bit of a gaff.
The dugout drama of the season, the standout bit of technical area of action. I mean, the one that springs to mind for me is Nuno Espirito Santo going wild and Tony Pulis resisting the urge to do what Neil Warnock did the week.
That was dynamite.
we can't really go into the expletives of what Warnock said.
That was championship clip of the season.
Yeah.
Seeing Nuno chase Warnock around
he flips him away with his backhand.
That might be a tasty one when they play again early next season. Any others? Gabs, you mentioned Leo's return.
Anything that you see on the pitch other than the football that stands out this season is got to be Leo's introduction to the crowd and his sort of rip-roaring raucous rendition of T-Siders. That was
and then piling in with the crowd.
Yeah, and then getting on the megaphone in the south stand. Yeah. When you think match day experience is obviously more than just the football and you look about. I always remember when Borough signed Pulis.
Yeah, I know, I was going to point this
out. And I was thinking, like, what's he going to wear? What's he going to have on when
I think it's a no-brainer when he comes out.
I remember, like, the first game at the Riverside was Villa, wasn't it?
Mm.
and he just strutted out, cap, glasses, full Borough trackie, and then like his white trainers just looked like
he looked
15
like
times too big for him, don't they? That was beauty.
I enjoyed it in terms of technical area action. I enjoyed, and I still do now, watching Pulis.
Yeah.
I thought Burton was brilliant
when we were so close behind him.
Yeah. And I remember there was a few Borough fans and Burton fans near, because the split isn't too far away there. And I was looking, and so many of the fans were just watching Pulis. Yeah. And he was brilliant. You know, the chew was flying. He must have screamed, give it to Adama, about 300 times. Yeah. The bottles of water are being kicked.
Yeah. It was interesting to see how many of the players actually responded to him, and how many just ignored him and got on with what they were doing.
Can you imagine some players, there's nothing worse than being shouted at for 90 minutes?
Well, not only that, he wasn't shouting instructions. It was, Patrick, 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 Gibbo, Gibbo, Adama.
He kicks an edge every ball.
I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not normally a fan of managers who just shout and gesticulate for 90 minutes, because I don't think it necessarily sends the right signals. But when you compare the way Pulis prowls the technical area with pure confidence and self-belief, to the way that, for example, Gary Monk cut a little bit of an uncertain figure, let's say. It's night and day, isn't it? And you've got like one manager who knows exactly what he's about, who knows his game, who's so experienced, you know, he knows football inside out. He's not going to be second-guessed by anybody. I thought that did show an inexperienced manager who made a lot of inexperienced decisions compared to a man who might get things wrong, but it's not because he doesn't believe in his decision.
In terms of decisions, one of the things that struck me was that Preston away was one of the bravest half-time substitutions I've ever seen, but it was also really well engineered, because he didn't make the change at the break. He came out and gave it 3 minutes to see if Preston had made a change.
Yeah.
Then after like 3 or 4 minutes, he made a double change, completely changed the shape of the team, changed the dynamics, changed the tempo, and got something out of a game that looked like it was well gone. And at that point you think, well, you can't remember the last time a manager had had such a radical impact on the game.
Coming into the press conference after that, one of the first questions was, you know, you gave him a rocket, you gave him a bollocking at half time, then did you, Tony? And he said, you know, absolutely nothing of the sort, nothing of the sort whatsoever. He talked to them and clearly talked through what change he was going to make in 2 or 3 minutes' time.
And then he said, by the way, what's the Gazette doing in here?
He hauled Britt off after 50 minutes at QPR as well.
Yeah.
He did the same.
The signs were there pretty early. Yeah. Credit to Britt for a game, like you're saying there, with what Downing did with Monk.
That's just reminding me of QPR. That was a
big win.
A good commanding performance away from home. I mean, they were poor that day, but that was, you know, I think that was
and
one of
George's
the,
rocket was a hell of
that
a
was goal. Obviously goal of the season easily that, but that was Traore's first goal for Borough, wasn't it?
Well, I remember there was a bit of national press interest there that day, and a couple of national reporters had come up and were just chatting with them at half time, and one of them had come up and said, what on earth is the story with Adama Traore? What has he been doing in the last 18 months, and what is he doing playing in this division? And I remember
did he do it to the tune of Morning Glory?
they put Traore up for press afterwards, and there was such a buzz, a hubbub around him. I remember getting a picture, and you could only just see Traore's head poking through the rest. It was just a real, and that felt like the day when Traore's season truly took off.
Once we went 2-0 up, and it was evident that like Borough were going to win that game comfortably. It was about 15-20 minutes to go, and like they were shooting towards our end that second half, and like the Borough fans were just willing Traore to get his goal, because he'd been playing really well for a couple of weeks, and it was almost as if like the Borough fans were just trying to like, you know, suck the ball in the net every time he got it.
If we were to do a championship in a nutshell award, the thing that springs to mind to me, and I'm sure I read this stat, is that the only team Wolves didn't beat this season was Sunderland.
Staggering.
Yeah, that is a mad start, yeah.
Which just sums up.
Did they do the double over, didn't they? Did Sunderland win at
Wolves? Goalless draw away.
Oh, was it?
And the home game, obviously, Wolves were well and truly on the beach. Anything else kind of spring to mind that think, bloody hell, the championship?
I said at the start of the season, I mentioned it, I think it's been a poor championship. I think it was there for the taking. I think Borough, I think that's why Cardiff finished second, because they weren't a particularly great team, but they were a well-organised team. I think if we'd sat here a year ago and said, you know, which team's likely to go up out of the chasing pack, no one would have picked Cardiff. Not on what we'd seen the previous season. So I just think personally, I think it was a missed opportunity. When you're being brutally honest, it was a missed opportunity for a club like Borough to bounce straight back. I think it was a poor division. The Wolves were far and away the best team, weren't they? And then after that, it was the chasing pack. And it's, you know, whoever misses out this season will be kicking themselves, I'm sure.
Just on Wolves, I mean, there was that spell, sorry Victor, but there was that spell, there was that 15-minute spell at the Riverside after they'd scored the first goal, where that was the best spell I've seen from any team in the Championship.
Borough were dazed and confused, weren't they?
I think the key thing that stood out this season is that if you can get a team to play to a system that everyone understands, then you can punch above your weight. And obviously Cardiff is the biggest example of that, because the previous season they'd been, you know, only just avoided relegation, didn't make any major changes really, and they played as a team, they got completely organised and delivered results. But you also had Millwall doing that, and Bristol City doing that, and Sheffield United doing that, and that blew away the notion that its wage bill is the main determinant of your position.
Well, there have been a few clubs, hasn't there? Blackpool when they came, Burnley when they first came. There's been several examples of clubs that had no great squads that people would envy, who, as you say, Vic, punched above their weight. And it makes you wonder whether the policy that Borough pursued a couple of times now in the Championship, they did it with Strachan when they threw money at the problem. They did it to a degree with Karanka, and they didn't get up the first time, but they got up the second time. And then they certainly did it with last summer with Gary Monk, where they definitely spent a lot of money.
I don't think there's a hard and fast rule, because obviously if you look at the top six, Wolves spent heavily, Borough spent heavily, Villa spent heavily the previous season, Derby County have spent heavily. So it's not, you know, there is an element of money.
You need the joint thinking to go with it.
If you've got a strategy and a framework that everyone knows, you get more bang for your buck. Yeah.
The unpredictability,
it's got to be logic, hasn't it?
The unpredictability of it, though. I mean, what we should do next season, and what we should have done this season, the first game of the season, we should all write down the top. Who's going to be the top two?
Well,
who's going to be the bottom three? Who's going to get in the playoffs? Right, and put it in a sealed envelope and leave it for a year, because I guarantee, you know, there was a couple of murmurs and rumours that Wolves might be fancied, but they weren't like they're going to be up there this year.
I certainly tipped them at the start of the season.
I certainly would.
They also tipped Reading and Borough.
I think you find out tipped Cardiff.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't want to. But I also said Wolves will either win the league or go down, because I thought it was going
to
be
for Reading. You know, for Reading to be a spot kick away from getting promoted to the Premier League,
that's why I picked them.
Within 8 months to be flirting with relegation in the last two or three weeks, and it's not as if like all their best players were shipped out and they lost the manager who was quite fancied. You know,
well, you said it there, so let's do it, and we'll do it again when the season starts. When we're knocking on the door of the season. But this week, I've already seen two former Borough managers, Steve McLaren and I, talk around, basically saying that they're plotting a playoff tilt next year. If you had to pick your three now. And I realise it's on, you know, absolutely nothing, because we don't know what squads, who's going to be managing or what. But if going on what you know now, who would be your three?
Borough win the league.
I'll write this down, because we'll do it.
I mean, you know, looking at probably whoever loses at Wembley on Saturday is going to be fancied, aren't they?
So Fulham, Villa.
They're going to be up there.
I'm
not
sure I'd fancy either.
Are you going Borough?
I think Borough will get automatic promotion next year.
Yeah, and who's your third?
West Brom.
Don't you know someone who's took a ton on Karanka to take Forest up this year?
That was on social media, wasn't it?
Vic?
I think of the teams that come down, I think Stoke would be the best equipped, because I think Rower has had 3 or 4 years in this division. He knows the players, he knows the landscape, and Stoke will give him a relatively good budget. So I think they're the most dangerous of the ones coming down. I'd like to think that with a summer to recruit his own people in the right positions, I think Borough will be contenders. I think the loser of the playoffs will probably struggle next year for either financial reasons or they'll lose a lot of players. There's always one from the pack. I think Sheffield United weren't far short this year.
And getting Wilder signed up's a big thing.
Yeah, I think so. If they can just tweak it a little bit, I think them and Bristol, I think, aren't far away from being another being in the playoffs.
Is Mogga going to come up and do what Sheffield United done this year and compete? You know,
Borough, Forest, and Blackburn all to go. And Phil,
I think the Tony Pulis Borough team would have a chance if he's allowed to get the players he wants and build the system he wants. I do think it's going to be a tough summer for Borough because it's the same old problem. It's getting the players out as much as getting them in. You know, there's a lot of players that are on big salaries who cost a lot of money, and Borough will want the money back. So I think there's a potential there for a Tony Pulis Borough team. We saw over the second half of last season that he can put a team out that can get results. I think after that it's going to be such a tough call. I think I agree with Vic about Stoke. I think Rowett's a good operator. I mean they are saddled with some players who you just shake your head, don't you, Barahino and people like that. But still, that one of these teams coming down is going to get it right, you'd think. West Brom maybe have a few more structural problems. And then after that, it's somebody out of the pack, and there's no reason to suppose that one of the teams, you know, that finished around about. I mean, would Bristol City? I like Lee Johnson. Is that asking a bit much for them to kick on? Sheffield United, you talked about. So picking the third.
It's going to be interesting to see what Cranker does.
Moggers Blackburn.
Mogger Blackburn.
Sentimental vote.
Sentimental vote.
Yeah, that'll do us then, I think.
What about you?
Yeah.
Am I going as well? Well, I thought I was going to get out with that there for a minute. I'll go Borough.
You can't pick Liverpool.
I'll go one of those special nights in the Championship.
One of those special nights at Shrewsbury.
Yeah. I'll go Borough. I think I'll go Stoke as well with Rowett.
Before you do that, what... I was talking to my dad about this the other day. What is it about Rowett that everybody buzzes about? What has he ever achieved or done?
You can talk about that while I deliberate my third.
Well, his greatest achievement for me is what he did at Birmingham.
With no money in a basket.
No money, and that was a remarkable achievement. I think he's done a steady job at Derby. As Vic says, he knows the division. He's a steady operator. He got Derby at the playoffs, which was probably their bare minimum requirements.
There does seem to be a circle or group of managers though that people talk about as though they're the championship.
I like the way he talks.
Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, I like that. He convinces me when he talks. There's no bull with him. So
I have no idea.
It's a bulls game, isn't it?
So I mean, I feel like inclined to write West Brom down, but I don't for 1 minute think West Brom are going to.
I think if the Premier League
it depends season who they replaced Darren Moore with in
yeah, yeah, that's
if the Premier League season was 3 weeks longer than what it was, they would have stayed up.
Yeah, I'm going to go with West Brom, but I'm going to put an asterisk next to it. I don't think West Brom are going to go up.
we've all picked Borough then.
Yeah, we've all picked Borough. Yeah.
So
I think that'll about do us. Yeah. We'll go and spend the next 10 minutes telling Garbo he sounded brilliant on the track.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.